This is the duplicate tape of Mr. Milton Kwan's interview, tape 2, side A, from 90 minutes to 60 minutes tape.
The Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Study Center and Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. December 1, 1979. An interview with Milton Kwan at his residence in Los Angeles. This is interview number 2. Okay, Mr. Kwan. During our last interview, you mentioned that you moved into some place and the neighbors who were white were rather nasty to you. When was that and where was it?
That was the 8th and Gramercy house, a duplex. It was in 1946. Mm-hmm. And they were rather cool to us, I would say, and maybe more cool than rude, I would say, until they got to know us, and then we became good friends.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any similar problems elsewhere?
As far as neighbors being, no, I would say no, because we moved into Browning after that, and no resistance or unfriendliness, mm-hmm. and no problem where we are now in Somerset,
I see.
In the Crenshaw area.
What about that telephone call you made to a broker, and who told you that we are not selling to Orientals after he found out what your last name was?
That was when we were thinking of moving away from Browning, because we had 3 boys by then, and moving westerly, over here west of Crenshaw, or near the Crenshaw area in Santa Barbara Avenue. I answered an ad, and the broker found out my name and said, I'm sorry, we can't sell to Chinese. I don't think he was even that civil. I felt that he was rather rude, and it was in no uncertain terms, he was saying no minorities can buy this house. However, my wife recalls that we were shown other houses in this area before we had bought from the owner here.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a few minorities in this area by then, which was 1955 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
So that one of the realtor was the only instance that I had rebuffed from a broker.
Do you think the realtors reacted that way because they themselves had discriminated against the Orientals, or do you feel that they were told to be so
I kind of think it's the latter. I think the owners did not want to make waves with their white neighbors by being the first to sell in their block, shall we say, to a minority, an Oriental, for
mm-hmm.
instance. And I can see their logic. They probably thought we would devalue the house by being in their neighborhood.
In terms of just being like 2 dots of yellow in a sea of white, or not taking care of the house?
It could be a little of both. It could be that the minorities have some sort of background, or maybe being inferior to them, and maybe we don't know how to be a good, neat neighbor. That could be very well it. And also, they think by us moving in, others will sell, and then pretty soon their
mm-hmm.
house would go down in value, and then
the
neighborhood we broke up. Yes,
theory.
Domino theory, right.
I see. And that was the only instance where you couldn't even get to see a house.
Yes. Right. That was the end of it. Sorry, this house is not for sale to you.
Uh-huh. And you had never run across anything like that either before or after that instance?
Not anything that would stand out in my mind, because as I said, we were shown other houses and we finally bought this house from... It seems that our last three houses were bought from owners. I don't know if that's what kind of commentary that is on things, but maybe that's... That might be a cop-out on trying to buy it on an open market, and yet...
You mean you specifically went to look for houses which were for sale by owners?
No. This house here, for instance, we had been looking in the next block on Victoria, for instance, when my wife said, my sister called and said this house was for sale.
Uh-huh.
The owners were moving out, and it was a nice Jewish family, the Soters,
mm-hmm.
and they moved west, over there by La Cienega, and we bought this house.
Nice. No trouble?
No.
From the neighbors?
No. There were, as I said, if I did say, a few Chinese, Orientals rather, in this area, two of them being my sisters,
mm-hmm.
and a Korean family, but along Victoria they were willing to sell to us.
I see. And that was in 55?
Brokers. Yes, those were brokers.
And brokers showed the houses.
Right,
too.
All brokers. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I see. What about going back a little bit to pre-war days? Did your family or your family's friends feel that the Chinese either should engage in a certain profession to get away from discrimination, or what did you observe of the job market at that time? What did most Chinese people do for a profession or for means of earning a living?
Pre-war days,
mm-hmm.
pre-war and maybe during the war. No, you meant specifically
pre-war.
Pre-war,
and then we'll get to
mm-hmm.
during the war.
Well, pre-war, I went to art school till 39, which is a couple of years before World War II, as you know.
That's rather unusual for most Chinese students to go to art schools, did they?
Well, I guess there weren't many serious artists. There were a few. I remember Tyrus Wong
uh-huh.
and Gilbert Leung, who is an architect. And I don't remember too many other artists, me being the age I am, why there are many.
Did you notice what kind of professions the other Chinese tended to get into before?
There were a few engineers.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier in our interview, this tennis club, I'm just thinking now, they had dentists in it, engineers, and Tony Jew was in the county government in the tax area, I think, or maybe accounting. So
that was a sort of like a professional club.
Well, it wasn't meant to be open to professionals only. So other trades, I would imagine, would be the customary small business like grocery store.
Uh-huh.
There were some members who had that kind of business, and there were some in a produce business. I would say a lot tended to go into the produce business,
mm-hmm.
because possibly some of them came over from the old country and did not have opportunities to get higher education. And
your father was
yes.
still in the produce business at that time.
Right. He passed away in 38, so he was in it most of his life.
Mm-hmm. What did your mother do?
Oh, by the way, I'll answer that in a second. My father was a cook in the last year or so of his life for a private family.
He sold his grocery business?
His produce business.
Produce.
Right.
Business.
Wholesale produce. Yes, many were in the small business like grocery.
Oh.
And my mother, she was a housewife all the way.
Right. That's right. Why did your father sell his business?
He wasn't a good businessman, man, evidently, because he wasn't making money, and I think he actually went in debt, so the smartest thing to do was to sell it and take a private job as a cook. He was a good cook.
Uh-huh. And so all of you moved in to the house where he was working?
Oh, no. We stayed at Ninth Place, and he had to come home on weekends.
Oh, my.
Or day off. And he was, as a matter of fact, he worked for William Dieterle, who was a Hollywood director of note at that time, mm-hmm. and years after. So we, at that part, the last year of his, year or so of his life, we only saw him when he came home, on weekends or days off.
Oh, I see. Oh, was that a typical profession, being a cook?
I would say so, but I don't know. I would say in restaurants. I imagine there were a number of Chinese, like my father, who were cooking.
I mean, for families.
Oh, right, for, shall we say, the better, more well-to-do families who had their own maids and cooks and so forth. And so Chinese, and of course, I would imagine there were already many Japanese and other gardeners, but I don't recall any Chinese gardeners.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about manual labor? What kind of manual labor?
Well, I would call produce business almost manual labor.
Including the owners? Well, I guess, yeah,
yes.
One-man operation.
Right, yes. That happened in my father's case. More and more people were, by that time, the younger people were getting into the better professions, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like engineering?
Yes, engineering, aircraft engineering, architecture,
mm-hmm.
Dentistry, doctors, medicine,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Before the war now?
Yes. Because I mentioned in one of our interviews that the Lee family, the herbalist, S.P. Lee, his boys all became osteopaths, which my brother-in-law is too, which they have since been accepted as regular medical doctors now.
What's that?
Osteopathic physicians and surgeons. They treat the body in a more natural way, like chiropractors do. They work on the bones and the muscles. And their training maybe wasn't quite as many years as doctors, so the AMA, I hope I'm right in my information, did not accept them for many, many years as being equal to them. But now they are accepted as regular MDs.
Oh, I see.
So quite a few Chinese were in that, because there was a school in Loma Linda who trained many in that field.
You didn't know. How about like waiters and waitresses, those sorts of things?
I think there are many in that. Like you said, what I mentioned made it sound like the tennis club is a professional club. Those who were waiters and busboys and waitresses, you come in contact with them, but I didn't happen to have that many of those. There could have been those that did that in our tennis club. I don't recall. We didn't discriminate in the tennis club, least of all among our own kind.
Was it purely Chinese tennis club?
Yes, I recall. There was one June Lau, I think her name was. She was half Chinese and half white. There were more earlier in the interview. I mentioned two or three Chinese girls.
How old was she at that time?
Well, I was about 24, and she might have been a couple years older than I am. I was.
So her father married an American.
Yes.
So her father must have married her mother back in the 1920s.
Probably earlier.
Early 20s.
Well, let's see, I was about 25. I see what you mean, married. Well, I was born in 13, so her father had to be married before then.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
13,
right.
Yeah.
In the early 1900s. 1910 or something.
Isn't
that
rather unusual for Chinese to marry an American?
Yes, if you think back, yes, but there were a couple of other Chinese-American weddings, Chinese
mm-hmm.
white weddings, because Florence C., Mrs. Gilbert Leung,
uh-huh.
is of the same combination, and that family is quite a pioneer family in Chinatown. F.C. On, it might have been one of his...
Who's F.C.?
One or F.C. On. That was
which,
old.
Which part is the last name?
You know, that's very good. Good question.
C is her last name.
Yes.
So her father should have had the same name.
Yeah, he could have been. The F could have stood for his Chinese name. I don't know. C On might have been his Chinese name, and a lot of people don't take their regular, you know, Chinese name as the last name.
Oh, it's a double last name?
Mm-hmm. Oh. No, and my Chinese name is Wing He, so if I went to Q Wing He, would be Quan Wing He.
Uh-huh.
So Si On would be his Chinese name, not his surname.
Oh, excuse me.
But he took part of his name as being his last name. It's as if I gave my boys Wing.
Oh,
Michael Wing,
name.
Yeah, because my Chinese name is Wing He, rather than saying Quan, you see.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is a not an unusual... because I knew some Chinese family, Lo's, but Lo Gut is the father's name, was the father's name, and the boys took the Gott, G-O-T part. So it was Bill Gott, Archie Gott, Roman Gott.
Oh my God.
G-O-T is not a Chinese name.
Yeah.
But they were really Lo's.
So there were several instances of these kinds of marriages.
Yes.
And it's all Chinese men and white women, American women?
That is what I remember, those two families.
You don't remember any instances of Chinese women marrying American men?
No, not back then. Uh-huh. I don't, in my knowledge, I do not remember any.
I see. How did you feel, or how did other people at that time feel about these sorts of marriages?
I just paid no attention to it. I just knew that she was half and half, and that was it. And thought nothing
was
of
her. Was she treated any differently? Did you observe that she was treated differently?
Oh, no. She, the only thing I would say is that in marriages of that kind, the members, the offspring especially, would tend to go with the Chinese community.
Mm.
I think they were more readily accepted. They were perfectly accepted by the Chinese, and maybe, I don't know, they would have to tell you that.
Was it because of their last name, or because their fathers were Chinese?
It could be. Or maybe their fathers felt more comfortable being the head of the family also in his own community,
so
Chinese.
So the woman who married a Chinese man usually sort of adopted.
Right, what his husband's, right, exactly.
Ah, interesting. Getting back to the jobs, do you remember what was the average income for people before the war?
Yes. I started at Disney's as a trainee at $18 a week, of course, and then
is that good?
For a trainee, yes, and then I got up to $25, and then I remember during my time there before the war, I thought to myself, and I said, if I ever got up to $50 a week, I would be really sitting pretty. Mm. So $50 a week was a good salary then.
Yeah.
When I went into Douglas Aircraft right after the start of the war, so we could still qualify as a pre-war salary, 85 cents an hour was what my starting salary was, 1941, March 1942, three
uh-huh.
months after Pearl Harbor.
85 cents. How
okay, times 40, that would be $34 a week.
Yeah, that's good.
Right.
And that was right after your $25 a week salary.
Yes,
from Disney.
Yes, right.
Oh,
yes.
Oh.
Right.
Considerable jump.
Right.
So the average income at that time in the early 40s and late 30s would be around 18
no,
a week? Is that it?
Did you say early 40s?
Yeah, before the war.
Before
early 40s.
No, 18 is low. 18 is low.
Oh, excuse me.
I would say between 25 and 50.
Ah, the average.
Yes. 50 was good. So I would say something below 50, maybe between 25 and 40
uh-huh.
was a very livable salary then.
That was an average salary for white collar jobs.
Yes.
Okay. What about expenses then? How did that income compare with your housing and automobiles, clothing, food, medical care?
We got by. We probably still were able to save some. At that time, of course, I still had many sisters who were not working. Many of the family, a couple of them, my sisters by wartime were working.
Did those people save money, those Chinese?
Well, yes. They have a natural thrifty habit, so they, most of them didn't squander their money. And
what did they do with the money they saved?
I imagine most saved to buy homes and cars and things for their education primarily, I imagine, to, I'm speaking of the fathers and mothers,
mm-hmm.
for their children.
Yeah. What about, for instance, a house in like this in the early 40s, how much do you suppose it would cost?
In the early 40s, it wouldn't have been built yet, but you're just conjecturing, right?
Yeah, or something equivalent of this.
Well, this might give you an idea. When we sold the ninth place in 46 to move to Gramercy,
mm-hmm.
we sold it for $10,000, which was considered
a
low price. Some people think we could have gotten more. I'm trying to remember what we paid for.
How much did you pay for it? Yeah. Oh, no, ninth place, do you remember how much you paid for it?
Oh, it was probably $4,000 or $5,000 maybe.
And your parents bought it about when? 1923, right?
Right, just about then, yes. And we sold it in 46.
Mm-hmm.
That's, my goodness.
20 years?
Yes. We might have even paid less than $4,000.
Yeah. What about medical care? Do you remember? And that brings into mind the insurance, which I forgot to proceed.
You mean our insurance at that time?
Well, you mentioned earlier the insurance part, but except it was not medical insurance.
No.
Right now, why don't you tell me how much would an average visit to the doctor's office for a checkup would cost?
Mm-hmm. Well, we tried not to be sick, naturally. I remember that the expense in our family was my mother delivering babies, my sisters. And there was a lady doctor, by the way, that delivered my sisters and I, too, I guess. Maybe my last couple of sisters might have been delivered by a man doctor, I don't recall, but so far back as then, there were lady doctors.
And how about average doctor visits? Have you never been to a doctor for anything while you were growing up?
Isn't that something? I don't remember. I had my tonsils out, so I was in the hospital then, but I don't recall going to the doctor that many. Dentist,
mm-hmm.
yes. But
how much did a filling cost?
It's just a few dollars, maybe $3-4, as I recall.
In the early 40s? Or
oh.
When?
Hmm. I don't have 20s. Such a good memory now, Beverly. I would say in the 30s.
Yeah.
Yes, because I had some orthodontics done. And I don't recall what they were, but
also that's not fillings.
No, that's
you have braces.
Braces, right? This might be a clue. In 1939, we bought our first Plymouth. It cost $500. It was a four-door passenger car.
Okay. All right.
And
so that would have been about. It would have cost you about 5 months, maybe a little under 5 months' salary, 4 months' salary to purchase a car. If you lumped it all together,
right,
added all your salary.
Right, and of course I made payments in 18 months or 2 years, I remember, but I don't remember the amount of the payments.
Okay, you mentioned earlier now about not being able to obtain insurance.
Oh, yes.
When was that?
This was during the war, since we're speaking about wartime things. About 1944, I was at Douglas Aircraft, and there was a man named Daniels, I think it was. He used to come around and sell insurance. I don't know whether he was connected with, must have been a private agent. And I tried to buy some, he said, I can sell insurance, car insurance. I said, okay, why don't you get it for me? So you have good prices or whatever. Came back to me and said, I'm sorry, you couldn't buy me the insurance. I said, why? See, your name is wrong. I said, what's that mean? He said, you're Kwan. I mean, I knew what he meant,
yes,
Chinese. And he said, the Farmers Insurance Company will not sell you car insurance. So needless to say, from then on, Farmers Insurance will never be one of my insurance brokers. Even though I was in a war effort, this is what was ironic about it. I was, you know, a war industry, in the United States citizen and so forth. And
how did you feel at that time?
Oh, you don't feel good about such a thing. But at that time, Chinese especially, we weren't vocal. Even now, we're not that vocal, but we're better. So you just take it, just like this. When this agent told me I couldn't buy the in this area or buy the house he was selling, you just take it. You're very resentful, but.
Was there any group like the American Civil Liberties Union that would speak out for any injustices of this sort?
I don't think the ACLU. If it was in existence, it hadn't been as prominent. It wasn't as prominent as it is now, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There were no channels for you to
air your grievances.
No, people weren't into, shall we say, complaining or getting rights. Then you know we were in the war effort, and I don't think this came along until the '60s, like in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I see. Okay, and can you think of any other instances of discrimination other than this and the housing?
Well, I already mentioned earlier about the couldn't get into a dance place.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I played the tape earlier and I recall that. And
How long did that last before it ended?
Maybe the war started to help that a little. I don't know if I mentioned it, but there were barbershops you weren't supposed to go into, Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And there were restaurants that you thought twice or three times before you thought you'd dare enter for fear of reprisal, or not reprisal, for fear of being rejected or not welcome. So there was lots of discrimination.
When was that?
This was in the 40s, probably, 30s and 40s.
And after the war, it somehow got better?
I think it gradually got better. I'm taking an overview of this whole thing, and that was the way I remember it.
In other words, you don't remember any instances where you were turned away from a restaurant or a barber shop after the war because of your race?
No, maybe I made sure that I didn't go into those. I have to say this though, the better places, the better restaurants, the better stores, the better barbershops did not discriminate as much. Right. The shall we say the lower class, and I can almost say that with in society in general, in all levels of living, the educated people, the higher class people. Were fairer in the main, more fair to the minorities than, shall we say, the middle class. I think you'll find that true in a lot of things today, even.
Interesting. I saw you were being turned away from a rather fancy restaurant.
You have a good memory. No. We were turned away from the Palomar dance place.
Excuse me.
Yes, that was a kind of a public place. You were right.
High, middle, low.
Since it's a public place, and I there probably was food there, but it wouldn't be as fancy as where we went into, because of Victor Kwan. We went into some people. He was in a recording. Yeah, he was in a recording business.
Right.
Right, and he evidently knew either the band leader or the people at the Wilshire Bowl.
Uh-huh.
On Wilshire, near La Brea and Fairfax. That's a restaurant with dancing.
Uh-huh.
That was a fancy place.
And you couldn't get in?
We could get in there.
After
we were turned down at Palomar dance place. He said, I know where we can get in. And that was a higher class place.
Because he knew the band leader.
Maybe that was it. Or else, but okay, maybe that was the reason.
What about